Good morning, New Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company on Cordova Road and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We're also podcasting. The website is santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can listen to the show anytime you want, thanks to Santa Fe's Dotfoil computer services. And you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. We had originally scheduled for today a program which is a recording, a broadcast of an event of readings of poems by prisoners from Guantanamo. This has been rescheduled for Tuesday, November 20th. Thank you very much for tuning in, if you're tuning in for that, and sorry for the last-minute change. I'd like to welcome right now, by telephone, joining us is Ron Alpern. He's a film.
Good morning.
Good morning. He's a filmmaker, and his film Diego Rivera's Labor Legacy was made for Michigan Television. It is being screened this Monday, November 5th, at 7 o'clock in Room 216 of the Santa Fe Community College. Welcome.
Hi, and good morning to all your listeners.
Thank you. These murals by Diego Rivera that are the subject of your film, what are they about, and where are they?
They are at the Detroit Institute of Arts. They were Diego Rivera's second major U.S. commission that he did in the course of 1933. And what is interesting about the mural that preceded this was a relatively small mural at the San Francisco Stock Exchange. And then his next major commission after the Detroit murals were murals at the Rockefeller Center that were actually destroyed because of a political controversy. These murals in Detroit are an homage to Detroit's auto industry, which was at its zenith at the time. And they combine on a series of 27 panels in a courtyard of the Detroit Institute of Arts. Imagery that connects 96 different buildings at what was the pioneering example of industrial manufacturing, a vertical integration that Henry Ford pioneered at his Rouge River complex southeast of Detroit. And he was able in those series of factories to, within, I think it was 24 hours or so, take raw material that came by his own ships, and within 24 hours, those were turned into Model A cars.
How did Diego Rivera get the invitation to paint these murals? In other words, he was a painter of the Mexican Revolution. He was a part of the Mexican Communist Party, and here was the epitome of capitalist United States industry inviting him to paint a mural.
Well, this is a fascinating question, and I don't know that we can do justice to it right now. I think that we have to realize that we're looking at this question through the lens of 50 years of, you know, post-McCarthy, anti-communism, all of this kind of stuff. And at that particular moment in history, Rivera was hot. He and David Siqueiros were an emerging new art movement. He had been invited to the San Francisco Stock Exchange. He is, it is the Detroit Institute of Arts director, William Valentiner, who sees his work in San Francisco, meets Rivera, and secures an invitation for him to come to Detroit via Edsel Ford, who was Henry Ford's son, and in some respects, a very different personality than his father. And Edsel Ford was the head of the Detroit Institute of Arts Founders Society at the time, and they arranged this mural. Now, again, one of the fascinating parts about this is that if you see our program and or have the benefit of coming to Detroit and see the murals themselves, then there's probably lots more imagery online at the Detroit Institute of Arts website. You'll see that there aren't the kind of imagery of, you know, armed workers and insurrection that one would might associate with somebody with left-wing politics. On the other hand, the questions that Rivera pinpoints in this mural and the imagery that he does use is certainly pro-worker, and it minimizes management, and it has a vision of how all of this technology could be harnessed for the use of society, but it's very, very subtle in some ways. And in fact, he got criticized by members of the John Reed Club, who at that point, Rivera had already left the party, and in a very sectarian period, they were going after him, and they didn't think his murals were political enough. And,
well, hang on. What was the John Reed Club?
It was one of the Communist Party's literary organizations, and they had chapters throughout the country. And it was, but the point I want to get to is that by the time Rivera then goes to New York to do this commission for Nelson Rockefeller, he inserts Lenin in the middle of this mural, and that's where there is this fight over the New York murals that ends up leading to their destruction. But it is, you know, it raises the question of art and politics and what is the imagery of political art. In the Detroit murals, it's not only a question of are workers at the center of this technology. There are very few images of managers in this really robust, dynamic portrayal of the production process.
Well, it's an interesting moment in history and also in the history of art in which the factory is considered this on some level, even though it's the working conditions were terrible in many ways, it was considered this place of tremendous idealism because of its potential to make society so much better.
And that's where Henry Ford and Diego Rivera had an avenue where they could communicate and talk to each other. Rivera had profound respect for engineers, and he considered them some of the greatest artists of his time. And again, he was looking at it from a very different prism. But and the other very fascinating thing about the Detroit murals is that the Rouge complex in American society was extremely divided along racial and ethnic lines. And Rivera's imagery, in those key instances where he focuses on individual people and does vivid portraits of them, are of a group of workers side by side representing a whole range of ethnic backgrounds and races. And that was, in fact, the critical issue that the UAW, 8 years later, when it finally is on the threshold of organizing the Ford Motor Company, it was that question of racial unity that was pivotal to winning that particular organizing campaign and strike associated with it. And I'm trying to be as brief as I can and avoid going off into all kinds of tangents here, Mary Charlotte, but that's what's so fascinating about this particular moment in time that Rivera's captured.
Well, there's a very interesting point that comes up in the film, which is that the sort of beauty and aesthetic qualities of the mural, including the way the workers are working in terms of racial harmony and so on, is actually sort of prescient, and the gains made both in terms of racial issues and in terms of working conditions over the years that followed the making of this mural ended up making the factory look more like Diego Rivera's work in the first place, which really made me wonder about the power of art. I mean, do you think that ideal factory that he painted actually had an effect on the reality that manifested later?
Well, I mean, you know, we end the particular program with people who were those core union activists who built that campaign and who won those gains over the years and you know, and were the backbone of a union movement that tried to withstand right-wing counterattacks and all of that stuff. These people come to that mural as a sense of inspiration. for their work. I mean, where do people who are grinding it out and facing all odds turn to for their inspiration? At the beginning of the mural, a woman who at that point is in her 30s tells the, or late 30s, and this documentary was made in 1991, this woman talks about when she was a child, her grandfather, who was a Mexican worker, used to bring them to the murals every Sunday instead of going to church. It has, that is where art has that kind of power.
That's such an interesting story, because there's a parallel between the kind of frescoes that you see in Italian churches and the kind of, I mean, these are frescoes, right? These big murals?
These are frescoes, and you know, this is the point that makes it so uniquely Rivera. It is not only his studying of and his appreciation of the classical Italian art forms. It's his inspiration of his own indigenous art forms and his political vision here and his notion of an anti-capitalist kind of possibility for an industrial democracy. All three of those are combined in a way, along with his appreciation of science and that is borders on, you know, genius in terms of his ability to understand science and technology. It's all of those elements that are woven together to make his unique vision and his unique art.
We're talking to Ron Alpern, and the film is Diego Rivera's Labor Legacy, which is screening on Monday night, this coming Monday, the 5th of November, at 7 o'clock at room 216 of the Santa Fe Community College. Just on the art historical point of it, the Detroit Art Institute, are these murals still maintained? Have they had to be restored?
The Detroit Institute of Arts has just undergone a major renovation and expansion. Michael Graves was the lead architect. But these murals are considered, you know, in some respects, these are still the garden court of the original building. And there have been, they have not been without controversy. I mean, as soon as they unveiled in the 30s, there were people who wanted to have them whitewashed. The grounds that they objected to most was a particular panel that's relatively small that showed a passing reference to the nativity scene where Rivera is paying tribute to the leading biologists of the early 20th century. And that's what got the clerics upset in Detroit in the 30s. In the 50s, at the height of McCarthyism, there was an attempt to, and some talk of destroying the murals. And then in the mid-70s, there was one plan to put in some sort of new staircase that had the impact of interrupting this whole, the integrity of this garden court. But by the time that had run its course, in the late 80s, 90s, the murals have been appreciated as, you know, just this wonderful legacy that speaks so much of Detroit and is so integral to what Detroit is that it's really being well maintained and cherished. And again, I encourage anybody to go to the website for the Detroit Institute of Arts, or even better, go visit the Detroit Institute of Arts to see them firsthand. And they're often overlooked, because there's so much work of Rivera's, people don't necessarily spend the time to dwell into just how rich they are.
There is a particular irony, which is that these scenes of the bustling, prosperous factory were painted during the early years of the Depression.
Oh, right. And it literally came 6 months after the Detroit Hunger March occurred, when 10,000... workers marched from downtown Detroit, 7-8 miles in a very bitter winter, March day to demand jobs, to demand that Henry Ford contribute to the relief effort of Detroit workers. You know, the geopolitics of Detroit was his plant was in the city of Dearborn, which was an essentially a company town, and many of his workers lived in Detroit, and he was not contributing to the Detroit welfare system. And there was no, you know, compared to what we know now, there was no welfare system. And so these were very difficult times. And in the course of this march at the Dearborn line, Detroit workers were met with fire hoses and on a very icy day. And the confrontation resulted ultimately into a street brawl, and four workers were killed.
I think.
But Rivera makes no reference to these.
Right,
to
right.
These events in the murals.
When I was looking at the images in the murals, one of the things that, there are a couple of things that struck me, and one of them was that when you think about the art of our own time, a lot of which is television and movies rather than visual art in terms of capturing the public imagination, you don't have really working class people depicted barely at all. And so these images are all the more striking to our modern our current sensibilities.
Well, that's, you know, one of the profound issues of our time. You know, we do have the sitcom vignettes of working class life and that kind of thing. But there's nothing that puts that into a social context and explains how people built organizations to try to advance the interests of workers. There's not much, you know, on TV about the history of unions. And what was so fascinating in trying to do this half-hour television special was the way in which, you know, we were able to make those linkages. You know, at one point, we didn't get to explain who all these union activists really were, but it's absolutely fascinating to have one guy stand there and say, oh, Rivera painted this guy over here handling silicon sand with essentially a protective mask like a gas mask. But workers didn't have that in those days. And, you know, when you trace the history of worker safety movement, you know, sometimes those kinds of advances took 20, 30 years to negotiate or to pressure management to find alternative ways of coming up with safer techniques or having federal or state bodies that had jurisdiction to go in and monitor safety inside a plant. So all of that stuff is part of the American cultural and historical legacy that's too often overlooked.
Now, a lot of factory work has moved overseas to the detriment of the workers who are doing it overseas, because, of course, there's a lot of terrible sweatshop conditions and the same battles, if they're going to be fought, have to be fought from the ground up all over again. But in terms of the United States, what groups of workers are the equivalent in terms of hard work and dangerous working conditions as the auto workers of the 20s and 30s?
Well, I mean, you're starting to talk about areas that my expertise falls short on, but any time that people are involved in an industrial process as highly automated as any are, you know, these kinds of concerns about how work is organized, whether it's done safely, how are people being paid fair wages, are there benefits, you know, all of those issues cut across any kind of workplace setting, to my mind. But, you know, you can have UPS, I mean, think of what's involved in a UPS kind of operation, or think of what's involved in manufacturing of silicon chips. There's any number of opportunities where to raise the question of, is this machinery being organized in the safest way or the most ergonomically feasible way possible? It cuts across things well beyond the core manufacturing of what used to be in the 40s and the 50s, the CIO unions, the steel workers, the miners, the auto workers, the airplane manufacturers, the meat packers. You know, that in the industrial heyday of America post-World War II, all of those industrial, they were called industrial unions, you know. And then there were the other unions of the building trades and things like that, more closely aligned with the AFL, that also addressed these issues, or the Teamsters, you know, in terms of their ability to move product around the country and in and out of warehousing. So, you know, we are living with a much changed world in many respects, but many of the key issues are still in front of us.
Well, Ron Alpern, I want to thank you very much for being with us here on the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. The film is Diego Rivera's Labor Legacy, and it screens on Monday night, November 5th, from 7 to 9 in room 216 of the Santa Fe Community College. And we are just delighted to have you on the air.
Oh, my, it's been my pleasure, and I hope that what you can do is arrange to have my email address available to any listener who would like to follow up on what happens. And I want to thank Stan Rosen, a labor educator extraordinaire, who helped put this all together. And I only wish I was there to hear the panel. You are aware that the great-grandnephew of David Siqueiros, one of Diego Rivera's peers in terms of pioneering the Mexican muralist movement, is going to be the panelist for the discussion.
That's
so
right.
People
because
should not miss that.
Yeah, this is not only a film, I neglected to say this, but also a panel discussion, and there's a whole group of people interested in labor culture who will be there, both answering questions and speaking. So, thank you very much, and we are going to take a little break right now, and when we come back, we'll be speaking of the arts with Rob DeWalt. Stay tuned to KSFR. And I'd like now to welcome Rob DeWalt. He's the events editor for the Pasatiempo Friday Art Supplement in the Santa Fe, New Mexico, sitting in, speaking of the arts once more, for Robert Knott.
Hello, good morning.
And Jackie M. has just popped in also to join us. She's the director of education at the Georgia O'Keeffe Museum. And let's start with you. What is happening? We've got a big event this weekend.
Yes, the Georgia O'Keeffe Museum is sponsoring the Big Read in Santa Fe. And the Big Read is a project of the National Endowment for the Arts and the Institute for Museum and Library Services, also Arts Midwest. It's to encourage people to read again, and we're doing it through a book called Bless Me Ultima, a best loved book in New Mexico by
my favorite, Nye. Absolutely. It's an incredible book.
So besides encouraging people to read the book and having book readers' guides and teachers' guides for educators who are interested in teaching about the book, we are having a kickoff event at El Museo Cultural on Sunday at 3 o'clock. November 4th, and we will have a group of actors from Northern New Mexico College who will be doing dramatic reading from the book. We'll have Teatro de los Bailes playing music, and we'll also have generally a celebratory atmosphere with refreshments and a way of looking at the book, and we'll be showing some clips of Rudolfo Anaya talking about his own writing process.
And all this is happening on Sunday,
November 4th at El Museo at 3 o'clock. And then we have begun a series of programs. We'll have book discussions at the Southside Library. We're also going to have on November 14th, and then again on the 27th, a performance of stories from Bless Me Ultima. And this is definitely for families, and all of these events are free. And that will, again, November 14th will be at El Museo, and it will be performed by Charles Gamble, who many people know from his performances with Teatro Grotesco and also with the opera, Santa Fe Opera. And then we have him again at the Southside Library on the 27th. We have workshops in illustration, children's books workshops, and we hope people will just contact the museum for more information on the programs.
And the number is?
946-1007, or they can go to our website, www.okeefemuseum.org. Again, it's an exciting program that will go for a month throughout the entire community. We're even doing book giveaways, so we hope people will enjoy and read the book. And thanks so much for letting me pop in and
Thank
talk
you.
About it.
Thank you. Jackie M. is the Director of Education at the Georgia O'Keeffe Museum. Rob DeWalt, what else is happening?
I love Bless Me Ultima. When I was going to prep back in the 80s, it was required reading, and it was my favorite book. Lord of the Flies, all that stuff, forget about it. It was all about this book right here.
Yeah.
It was actually my first introduction to that sort of local, sort of connection in terms of writing. It's a beautiful book.
I read that when I moved here, and I got a sense of New Mexico a couple of generations ago.
Exactly.
That I never would have had otherwise.
Yeah. Didn't seem so foreign moving from Texas.
Texas.
Yeah. Well, that's where I came from. How was Halloween?
Happy Halloween. It was fine.
Yeah.
How was your Halloween?
Well, I didn't go to the Tiger Lilies. I didn't go. I stayed home with the kids, with the dogs, and gave out candy, opened the gates to the hyper highway, as they say.
I only got one trick or treater.
You got one trick or treater.
I got one.
I freaked out the day before Halloween. I went to the drugstore across the street to get candy, and I didn't know how much to get because I always have a lot of trick or treaters. So I bought like 9 bags of candy, and now I was standing in line next to a police officer, and he was giving me the strangest look. He was looking at the candy.
What do you think he thought?
I don't know. He was looking at the candy, and he was looking in my eyes, and then I was looking at him and looking at the package of donuts in his eyes, in his hands, and I was like, you got no reason to talk, buddy.
Well, I bought a container of chocolate-covered espresso beans, and I gave them to this little girl who came over with her dad's, and she was only, pre-verbal. She was probably about 2.5 years old or 3, and she started eating them, and I thought, oh, no, what have I done?
Yeah, what have you done? Bing, bing. That must have been a fun night. That must have been a really fun night. No, I stayed home. My roommate decided at like 8 o'clock that he was going to go out, and he dressed up like sort of this like Peter Pan lives on South Beach. He was dressed in neon green, and he had glitter in his hair and glitter on his hands. And I woke up the next morning, and there was so much glitter in my bathroom, it looked like someone put Tinkerbell through a shredder. But
really a great image, Rob DeWalt.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah,
Tinkerbell through a shredder.
Yeah, I worked on that one for like 2 seconds. What's going on in Santa Fe this week?
That's what I want to know.
Lots of stuff. Well, Dia de los Muertos, is today, right?
Indeed.
It is today, and there's tons of events going on. There's a Day of the Dead.
Or was it yesterday?
It's today. It's the second, right. There's a Day of the Dead celebration. There's a silent auction, games, raffles, food, and performances by Los Niños de Santa Fe Ballet Folklorico from 6 to 9 p.m. tonight. And that's at the Santuario de Guadalupe, 100 South Guadalupe Street. There is a charge, but the proceeds do benefit the dance troupe. And if you call 982-1829, extension 1370, you can learn more about that. There's a couple of Day of the Dead-related sort of music events. There's a dance party. Melanie Moore and a local tattoo artist named Crow present DJ Chowder from Panama, DJ Ben from Brazil, and our local favorite Joe Ray Sandoval. Melanie Moore is also going to be spinning. It's South American music, dance hall, world beat, break beat, and techno. There's also going to be an altar for you to bring pictures of your loved ones. And that's at the Plaza Cafe Southside tonight from 10 p.m. to, pretty late into the next morning. And that's at 3011 Cerrillos Road. And you can call 424-0755 for more info on that.
I want to let people know that the Slow Food Santa Fe Day of the Dead Feast has been canceled.
Oh, no.
But the Slow Food Afternoon of Chocolate with Mark Shishenti of Kakawa House Chocolates is, in fact, happening on Sunday the 4th from 4 to 6 p.m. at the Kakawa Chocolate House at 1050 East Paseo de Peralta.
Is there a charge for that?
Yes, there is.
Okay.
Oh, yes. Chocolate does not come free, ladies and gentlemen. The number for more information is 820-2745.
Excellent. Excellent. Also, there's a couple of Warehouse 21 benefits. One is Day of the Dead oriented. They're having a music celebration at, where are they having it? Oh, it's at El Museo Cultural de Santa Fe. And that's at 7:30 p.m. tonight. And that's at 1615 B Paseo de Peralta. Rubixu, which is sort of a hip-hop group. DJ Kiddo is going to do some scratching. There's going to be some rock and R&B by Soulfire and some experimental rock by a group called EV2. That's at 5 p.m. It's kind of a potluck supper deal. The potluck supper is at 5, and then the concert starts at 7:30. And all proceeds benefit Warehouse 21, the New Mexico Young Fathers Project, and the Santa Fe Boys and Girls Club. And if you call 992-0591, I believe that's the number for El Museo Cultural. No one usually picks up the phone until after 1 o'clock, so don't bother right now. You can get more information.
Hey, on Tuesday the 6th of November from 6 to 8 at the Whole Foods Community Room on Cerrillos Road, there is a slideshow, a presentation by Dorothy Granada, founder and medical director of a health clinic in Nicaragua that has for 16 years delivered health care to this region that suffered devastation after Hurricane Joan in 1988. It's a cooperative run by women in the village of Mulukuku. And they have made this incredible health clinic, and Dorothy Granada is here to tell you about it. It's a fundraiser to support this clinic, and let's see if there's a number for more information. Don't see it. Anyway.
Mulukuku.
Mulukuku.
Wow.
Yep.
That's how you pronounce it?
Well, it has an accent over the final U. There's a lot of U's in that word.
Yeah, there are. What else? Oh, Mari Sato's back.
Yes.
She's going to be performing new songs with guest musicians from Japan and the Caribbean. And she took off. I bumped into her right before she left for Australia. She was excited. She was going to be leaving, working on some new material. And she's come back. And she's going to be performing at 8:30 p.m. on Saturday at the Silver Starlight Lounge at Rainbow Vision Santa Fe, which is at 500 Rodeo Road. And there is a charge for that. And you can call 428-7781 to find out more.
Hey, how about the Handful of Diamonds?
Handful of Diamonds. That's going to be a great event. It's a benefit for the Esperanza Shelter for Battered Women and the Santa Fe Rape Crisis and Trauma Treatment Center. There's going to be performances by pianist Kevin Hayes, percussionist Nasheet Waits, keyboardist and flutist Kofi Burbridge, and stand-up bassist Torres Mateen. And Nancy Nielsen, I believe, is going to be doing some singing. And that's at 7:30 p.m. on Saturday at the James A. Little Theater, New Mexico School for the Deaf. There is a charge, and tickets are available online if you go to www.handfulofdiamonds.com. Again, that's Saturday night at 8:30. And what else? Liquid Assets. This is something I was actually interested in going to this, but I have stuff to do on Saturday. Using Water in the Arid Southwest.
Yes.
It's presented by the School of for Advanced Research, the Museum of New Mexico, and Friends of Archaeology.
Yeah, we talked about this with archaeologist mm-hmm. Eric Lindman this week on the show. Very interesting archaeological look at water use in New Mexico over the past centuries and even millennia.
It's something that seems to be getting a lot more attention these days, even though it's not usually the time that we think about drought. It's still important to think about these things now. I gather it's sort of a panel that includes experts in anthropology, climatology, geography, and water law. And that's from 9 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. at Armory for the Arts on Saturday, 1050 Old Pecos Trail. There's a charge for that. And if you call 992-2715, you can make reservations for that.
Hey, on Monday, Edgar Heap of Birds, the artist, talks at the Santa Fe Art Institute at 6 o'clock at Tipton Hall, which is right next to the Santa Fe Art Institute on the campus of the College of Santa Fe. The lecture is 6 o'clock on Monday, and then there's a workshop also from 10 to 4. For more information, 424-5050 is the number for the Santa Fe Art Institute. And he's a Native American artist, activist, and scholar who we are going to have on the show on Monday at 8:30.
Excellent. Hey, I caught your interview with Valerie Plame.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was pretty awesome. I read the book last weekend.
What there was left of it.
Yeah, exactly. What there was left of it.
The book is full of black lines where the text was censored, and they left the black lines in.
It was, well, the journalist that did some of the sort of investigating and found out some, filled in a few of the gaps. That was probably one of the more interesting parts of the book. I mean, the story itself
is interesting.
Yeah, the afterword.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, it's funny. I talked to people while I was reading the book. And it's so funny that you know, she's on television and she's on the radio and she's making appearances and stuff, and people talk about her, you know, like she's a celebrity, and it's funny because you have to remind them to put it into context, and that is that, you know, the Central Intelligence Agency isn't exactly the sweet little old lady next door, you know what I mean? And they forget that. They forget that when they see the story on the TV, and I say, read the book, get some perspective, you know. But
yeah, it's easy. It's a easy, quick read, and very interesting.
It is, and she's going to be at the Lenzic Performing Arts Center on Tuesday the 6th at 6 p.m., and there's a number of different ways that you can pay for that event, and they, some of them get pretty up there, but if you call 988-1234 or
cash, check, or credit card.
That's what, yeah, those are three ways. You can call 988-1234 or go to the Lensic website to get more information on that event.
We're speaking of the arts with Rob DeWalt.
speaking of the arts, I also heard, I think it was last Friday, you were playing something from Jazzology.
Yes.
Jazzology and the Southwest Jazz Orchestra are going to be performing in support of KSFR FM 101.1. And that is...
That would be we.
That would be you. That would be where we are right now.
Yes.
It's a public radio station. It's local. There's a no host bar and desserts. That is Monday the 5th from 8 to 10 p.m. at the Lodge at Santa Fe. You know, that place is really blowing up. There's so many different events going on there these days.
It's so true.
And it's such a weird location, but everyone seems to like it.
Well, it's gone through. The Lodge of Santa Fe used to be the Radisson, and before that it was the Picacho.
Mm-hmm.
And when it was the Picacho, I used to dance salsa there every Friday night of my life.
Really?
It was fantastic.
Now, Picacho, that's got to predate...
That was the mid-90s.
That was the mid-90s. Okay. Yeah, I only remember it as the Radisson. I guess I just didn't get up there much. But
I thought you were born and raised here.
Yeah, but, I mean, what am I going to be doing at a hotel?
Dancing salsa at a hotel with Frederick Baranda.
A 13-year-old dancing salsa at a hotel.
Good point.
The Old Crow Medicine Show.
What, are you 23 now?
Yeah, no, right, yeah, yeah. I got flowers with a note on my birthday last week that said 40 is catching up. That's all it said.
Catching up.
Hmm. Yeah. Old Crow Medicine Show on Monday the 5th, also at the Lensic. This is sort of a newgrass group. It's sort of a combination of sort of old-timey music with sort of updated themes. And I wrote about it in my column this week, my Soundwave column. Read it, check it out. That's on Monday the 5th, and that's at the Lensic. Call 988-1234 for ticket info.
How about the Queen's Ransom Fashion Show and Benefit for Warehouse 21?
That's it. That's the other one, right? That's the same day, Friday.
That's Friday. That's today.
Yeah.
Okay. Did you already say that?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, sorry.
No, I didn't mention that. Go ahead.
Oh, no, you.
Okay. It's a black tie optional party that includes food, wine, a fashion show, and other surprises. It's a little expensive, but you get something pretty neat in return. That's at 6:30 p.m. tonight at Queen's Ransom in DeVargas Center. That's the DeVargas Mall, 564 North Guadalupe Street. You can call 986-9091 for tickets, and again, it is a benefit for Warehouse 21. They're you know, getting ready to start building, you know?
That's amazing.
I know.
It's great.
It took a while, but they finally did it, and they're finally there. Hey, I want to let everybody know that this is the week that La Casa Sena's Cantina sort of pulls back on the number of performances that it does. It goes into its sort of winter rotation.
Hibernation.
Mm-hmm. Well, not hibernation, but on Friday and Saturday night, they still have the two gigs at 5:30 and 8 p.m., and the rest of the week, they only have a 6:30 gig. So before it gets really, really cold, it gets really, really busy in there. So get
right.
there early and get there often.
Right.
I love that show. That's something very Santa Fe. Michelle Zackheim, on Sunday the 4th, the author and artist is going to sign copies of her book, Broken Colors, at 3 p.m. at Garcia Street Books at 376 Garcia Street. If you call 986-0151, you can get more info on that. I went to school, I think, with Michelle's brother. I'm pretty sure that we graduated in the same class. What else is going on? Oh, there's more information that this the Big Read, which we just heard about, on Thursday the 8th, there's going to be sort of a roundtable, sort of open to the public conversation about Rudolfo Anaya's Bless Me Ultima at 6:30 p.m. at the Southside Library at 6599 Jaguar Drive, 955-2828, and there's no charge. If you love the book as much as I do, it might be worth going to some of those events. I've never seen sort of a reading of it or even a stage reading.
I haven't either.
I'm not sure how they're going to do that, but they did it last week up in Abiquiú, and they're doing it again this week here in Santa Fe. That's at 3 p.m. Sunday the 4th at El Museo Cultural. And again, you know, there's no charge for that, but El Museo can be hard to get a hold of, but if you call 505-685-4884 or contact the museum, you can get more information on the events. And those are ongoing events. There's a bunch of them. What else? In concert on Wednesday night, John Prine.
John Prine!
Yeah. John Prine is well, I think he's back. He's been here before. He's going
to
be.
I used to listen to him when I was in college back in the dark ages.
Really? You know what? I tried to find a picture of him to put in the calendar this week, and I just couldn't get a hold of one. But he's performing on Wednesday at 7:30 p.m. at the Lenzic, at 988-1234 for ticket info. What else is going on?
Well, tomorrow morning on Camp Love Wave right here on Santa Fe, an economic specialist will visit the camp to discuss the Federal Reserve, World Bank, gold, and the euro. That's at 10 o'clock right here on KSFR.
Huh. Let's see. What else? The Dialogue 360, Artists in Conversation. There's a multimedia presentation by artists Melody Sumner Carnahan and Michael Sumner. And they're members of the sort of literary art collective called Burning Books.
That's right.
And that's Thursday the 8th at 6 p.m. at CCA at 1050 Old Pecos Trail. You can call 982-1338. If you're a student and you have an ID, there's no charge. Take advantage of it.
Now, I got an email from Merido Rubenstein saying that Michelle Zackheim is an artist who's... You know what? I can't read this.
Why not?
Sunday, because
are
it's
there
all
bad words
because
in
it's
it?
All no, because oh. It's all a mess. Sunday, November 4th at 3 p.m. There's a book signing and reception. Did you just say this one already?
Uh-huh.
At Garcia Street Books.
Uh-huh.
I'm sorry.
Oh, that's fine.
I wasn't listening.
That's
Robert Knott catches me on that sometimes, and now you did too.
I thought you were going to say you got an email that said Well, never mind. That's fine.
I'm just going to shut up now.
No, that's okay. Hey, the play Radium Girls continues this week at Santa Fe High School Theater. It's the D.W. Gregory play based on a court battle between workers exposed to radiation and the company that employed them. Their shows, Friday and Saturday at 8 p.m. at Santa Fe High School Theater. That's 2100 Yucca Road. That's my neighborhood. You can call 476-2970 for more information. And that's, Friday and Saturday. What else? Santa Fe Pro Musica. The Pro Musical Orchestra is going to be performing with guest pianist Joel Fahn. It's music of Bartok, Beethoven, and Ravel. And that's 3 p.m. Again, it's at the Lenzic. 988-1234. You can also call Pro Musica at 988-4640 for tickets. There's a story in this week's Pasatiempo that comes out today, and that story's on page 22. I would check that out. What else? Oh, the Autumn in New York at Vanessi. The concert's Sunday, the 4th. Musical review of songs about Manhattan with pianist and vocalist Charles Tishner and singer Leslie Livingston. Music of Leonard Bernstein, Cole Porter, and a bunch of other people, but that's at 5 p.m. on Sunday at Vanessi of Santa Fe, 434 West San Francisco Street. You can call them at 982-9966 for more info on that. There's a couple of openings coming up. There's a lot of openings today or tonight. Cruise Gallery at 616 Canyon Road is having an opening called Pinata. That's a mixed media work by Tuscany Winger and Altered Toys by Jennifer Joseph. And at 5 to 7 p.m. there's going to be a reception. And there's also going to be a pinata busting. They're going to bust open one of the pinatas, and you're going to get
to see. Do grown-ups get to do it?
I'm not sure if the artists are going to do it or if the people that show up at the reception are going to do it. I guess it depends on how much the wine flows. But that is going to be through November 26th. And again, that reception is tonight from 5 to 7 p.m. What else? Riva Yaris Gallery, 40 Images, 40 Years. Photographs by Douglas Kent Hall. There's a reception tonight from 5 to 7 p.m. at 123 Grant Avenue.
And we had him on the show this week, and he's an amazing photographer.
He's a great photographer. He's also going to be signing copies of his book, In New Mexico Light, in conjunction with the exhibit from 4 to 2 p.m. on Saturday at the gallery. That's 123 Grant Avenue. And you can call 984-3030 for more information. There's a great story about that in the Pasatiempo on page 36 today. Ooh, all kinds of stuff going on. Lots of ongoing openings and ongoing stuff at the galleries.
Did you talk about Made in China?
I could talk about it, but I haven't. But you should, because
I have it right in front of me here, but I'm now double checking. Made in China, an exhibition of artwork by New Mexico artist Gordon Fluke. That is the reception today from 5:30 to 7:30, and that is at the Works on Paper Gallery. At 229 A Johnson Street.
That's right. And that reception is today?
Yep.
Okay. Glad
that's what
that
it says
right.
on this piece of
yeah,
paper.
Yeah, no, that's correct. I'm just looking at the calendar, and it's and that show is up through December 2nd.
Yep.
What else? What else is going on? Ever done Scottish country dancing?
Can't say I have.
Do you even know what it is?
Can't say I do.
I want to go and find out one of these days. Every
you seem to like things like that. Last week it was Lederhosen.
Yeah, Lederhosen. This week it's Scottish country dance. I'm not sure if there's kilts involved. I'm not sure if you have to paint your face blue and say, you know, scream things that they'll get
I think the worry would be having to listen to the bagpipes.
Oh, yes.
See what I'm saying?
What was it? It was something I read. It's actually the signature to all of my emails, and it says, "Ah, the bagpipes, the pride of Scotland," and then it goes on to say something like, "The sound of flayed cats inside the colon of Satan himself."
Oh no!
But
did you make that up?
No. I was reading a blog on the internet, and I found it. And being of Scottish descent, I decided that I would tag it on to my emails, and no one's complained yet. But we'll see.
You won't hear me complaining.
The Dirty Dozen Brass Band.
By the way, I would like to say that for all some of the things that we don't read that we should are the cinema events, the film events happening at the Santa Fe Film Center, the Screen, and the CCA Cinematheque, three marvelous theaters that give you a variety and richness of film from all over the world that is just unbelievable, especially for a town of this size. So I just thought I would say that.
No, it's great. I mean, in terms of the cluster of population that we have, the number of theaters that we have that play film like that, it's a real gem. You know, when I lived in Seattle, it was hard to find films like that. But in this town, they make it fairly easy and fairly inexpensive, too.
Indeed.
Compared to, say, California or New York, anyway. Indiana Bones and the Last Dragon Hunter. This is a kid event, but I bet there's some adults out there that would get a kick out of it, too. Storyteller Mike McCartney is going to unravel his new dragon puppet and do some storytelling today at 2 p.m. at the Santa Fe Public Library, the main branch, downtown at 145 Washington Avenue. 955-6783. I always wonder why they do those events on Fridays when the kids are in school. I don't know. But I guess it's 2 p.m. Maybe the kids get let out early?
Maybe they do. I think don't elementary school kids get let out early on Friday?
I think they probably do.
Did I just interrupt you when you were about to say something that was happening at the brewing company or something?
I was going to say that the Dirty Dozen Brass Band is playing. And if I can find the information, I'll let you know all about it.
We're listening to Rob DeWalt, Speaking of the Arts.
Oh, here we go. It's Tuesday, the 6th, at the Santa Fe Brewing Company. Trombone Shorty and Orleans Avenue are going to be opening. Or is it Orleans Avenue? I'm not really sure. That's at 7:30 p.m. on Tuesday, the 6th, Brewing Company, 27 Fireplace. You can get tickets in advance at the Lensic Performing Arts Center, 988-1234. You can also get a little more expensive tickets at the door. And you can call 424-3333, which is the number for the brewing company, for more details on how to do that.
And that's it. Rob DeWalt.
We're out of time.
Events editor of the Pasatiempo, Friday Art Supplement in the Santa Fe, New Mexican. Speaking of the arts, sitting in for Robert Knott. Robert Knott will be back next week, but we hope you come back sometime soon, because it's always nice to have you.
Well, Robert keeps threatening to have us both on at the same time.
That would be terrifyingly wonderful.
Okay. Maybe we can do it soon.
Thank you so much, Rob.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. KSFR streams live on the web at ksfr.org. You can email me at radiocafe@ksfr.org or leave a message at 428-1528. We're podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show anytime you want to listen, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services. And you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. Thanks to Laurel Reynolds for engineering today. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team. And after that, Jazz a la Carta. Broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company, my name is Mary Charlotte. We will see you tomorrow. No, actually, we won't see you tomorrow. Well, maybe we'll see you sometime in Santa Fe tomorrow, but I am taking the weekend off, and we'll see you on Monday. And that's all for now. I'm going to stop talking. Bye.